Welcome back, everyone, and welcome to episode 18 of the Dubai Life podcast. Believe it or not, this is now our sixth show that we've done during this corona era, I guess we can call it. The lockdown's lifted, but we've been recording these Zoom podcasts, and all of the episodes that we've done during this time period are now up on YouTube. So head over there if you haven't already and give us a subscribe. Loads planned for the future on YouTube. Now, in this show, we've got the incredible Mr. Richard Hussain. Richard has done some amazing things during his short life, including being involved with over 100 million views on YouTube, licensing for some of the shows you might recognize, such as Sex in the City. And Richard has also worked his magic with leading organizations such as Coca-Cola, Emirates, Apple, Sony, and the EMI Group. So loads to talk about later in the show, loads coming up. But first of all, from one Richard to another, how's it going, Rich? You well? How about that intro?
Yeah, very good intro, my friend. I hope my intro is going to be just as powerful.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to get these some of these intros done. I'm sure you could do a good job.
Oh, you're doing a good job there, my friend. A very good job.
Thank you.
How are you?
Much.
Are you well?
Yeah, everything's good. I'm well. Getting out this afternoon for some viewings, which should be good. This is the first time I've ventured out since the lockdown almost a month ago. Well, it was over a month ago, wasn't it? So,
yeah,
hopefully I remember how to drive and the car works.
Where are you going?
So three different viewings. We're going to start off at the golf club. I'm showing some Parkway and Fairway Vistas, 6 and 7 bedrooms that I've got for sale. Then over to the other side of Dubai Hills, we're viewing Sidra and Maple.
Some
other clients.
I'm out as well. It shows you the variety of Dubai. I'm out at 2 o'clock in Serenia on the Palm. Beautiful, top quality escape from Dubai, if you like. It's only half an hour away from the city centre.
I love Serenia.
But once you get there, you've got your own beach, you've got your own infinity pools, high quality gym. Yeah. Beautiful finish, nice designs, and gorgeous views over the lagoon, as I call it, overlooking the fronds of the Palm and the sunset.
It's
so that's
amazing.
A real beautiful place.
What are you doing there?
I've got a half floor penthouse, 3 bedrooms. The master bedroom is amazing, with the most biggest dressing room, beautiful high quality ensuite, etc. It's just gorgeous. 2 kitchens as well, the show kitchen and then the heavy kitchen behind it. Great. 600,000 for that one. So a very reasonable 600,000
for the rental.
1,000 rental, for a year's rent there.
Nice.
And then when I finish there, I'm off up into JVC to the 5 in JVC to show a 1-bed furnished apartment at 75,000 dirhams.
How big is that 1-bedroom, by the way?
It's about 800 square feet, fully furnished and very nice. Yeah, it's never been lived in, brand new. And I'm showing that to a nice couple this afternoon.
Does that come with the swimming pool on the balcony? Because I've seen a few of those apartments with the balcony, private swimming pool.
No, unfortunately not this one. It's got a nice balcony, nice location,
the 2 bedrooms,
etc. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the 2-bedroom
nice.
Ones there.
So,
but looking forward to it. But isn't it amazing? You know, you just don't get that diversity in the UK, or that not that often anyway. You know, you tend to work in an area. And it's the same, pretty much. In Dubai, 1 minute, 600,000 overlooking the beautiful blue seas. The next minute, a very nice, purpose-built, one-bed, stylish apartment.
Interesting.
Looking forward to being out about.
Keeps you on your toes, doesn't it, Rich? How about the news this week? Has there been anything that's caught your eye? I've read a few articles recently, which have come out. Have you seen anything that was interesting of late?
The one, I'm going to sort of preach on about my favourite topic and your favourite topic about how people should take this lockdown seriously, Because again, I still think we've been on that stir-crazy freedom, let's get out there, and it's not going to happen to me, let's get out there and party. But I think you said to me this morning that, the cases are still going up, and again, whether that's to more testing or more outbreak of the case, I don't know. But we should take this seriously. And the police and the government are taking it very seriously.
They've
just published figures today, haven't they? Like in a 3-week period, the 26th of March to the 16th of April, there was 52,069 fines for non-following of the regulations to do with going out on unnecessary journeys, not wearing masks, having more people in the cars, etc. And then another 58,000 radar fines being given out. So, wow. Coupled with the fact that the government and their agencies are inspecting the malls, the shops, to make sure the social distancing is being carried out, all things like that. And they're not afraid to close down quite important shops in the malls or quite important shops out on the streets, etc. The government and the police are taking this lockdown very seriously, and so should we.
They are. I've heard a friend of mine, they went back to the office on Sunday and it hadn't been disinfected properly. So the police were like, no, you've got to disinfect it properly. And they're in back in tomorrow. But it has to be a full, thorough, you know, professional disinfection, not just a deep clean. So it's good that they're taking it seriously. Cases are still rising. We're now at 10,839 cases and 82 deaths. But I think the government have said, look, you know, the hospitals aren't overrun. We need, you know, the economy, which, you know, it's important to still have businesses running and operating and bringing in revenue. So, you know, as long as we can manage it, I don't think there's going to be an end to this until there's a vaccine anyway. So, you know, hopefully the hospitals can cope and people stay safe. But talking about the economy, you've seen something about instant licenses for new businesses. Have you lost me?
Hear me now? Hello? Hello?
I hear you.
Oh, you can't hear me. We've had a technical...
You're hear me now? Back. I can hear you now, yeah.
Perfect. I don't know what happened.
Yeah. Never mind.
Perhaps I've clicked off. So, where was that?
There's me fronting the cutthroat and...
I thought you were going to talk about the new economic stimuluses that the government have introduced. I was like, that's a positive. What do we know about that?
Well, again, just one little indication of how determined this government are to kickstart the economy back. They've just slashed one of the licence fees from a very reasonable 3,000 dirhams per annum anyway to an incredible 250 dirhams to get yourself a sole trader licence or a small entity LLC license as well, to get you started, to encourage entrepreneurs to come into the market and see if their business can succeed and will work. The government say, look, we're going to back you. We're going to do all we can to help you, cut the red tape, cut the admin fees, etc., to get you started.
That's brilliant.
Again, I think this is the way we're going, isn't it? When you look at individual workspaces now that weren't allowed a few years ago because of the licensing issues, we're now seeing that the actual private small workspaces, coupled with easy-to-get sole trader licenses at this kind of cost, is a lot of small entrepreneurs, professionals, etc., will be going this way, I'm sure of it. And again, it's, you know, it's a credit to the government to recognise this and also to try and stimulate things, to get things moving, that they've done this. What do you think?
It's great. It's really good timing, obviously, with the virus. But in general, I think the UAE... is the startup center of certainly the Middle East, you know, and we've seen some amazing startups come out of the city over the last, since I've been here anyway. And it's really good to see that the government have noticed that this is an opportunity where we can grow, especially with the expo coming up. I think, you know, if we can put a spotlight on this area being a startup hub, obviously with low tax implications as well, then it's going to attract a lot more businesses, not only people that are here already. I know that the young generation, the millennials and the local, you know, young population here are very much tech savvy and do have a lot of disposable income. So it's a really good incubator for startups. But also people that are coming overseas, they're going to see the opportunity. And yeah, it's really smart move by the government, I think.
I agree totally. While we're talking as well about sort of like shout outs and congratulations, in that case to the government, I just want to mention as well, Seven Tides. I think they are very worthy of a shout out. Seven Tides are a big residential and commercial developer over in mainly Discovery Gardens and Ibn Battuta. But they're showing a social conscience. They've just announced as well that they are prepared on their 10 residential buildings in Discovery Gardens and their big residential in Ibn Battuta, that say, look, We understand what's going on. If you've got problems, come and talk to us. If you want to leave Dubai, we'll waiver your penalty clauses on the contract. If you've lost your job or had salary reductions, come and talk to us and we'll renegotiate the terms of your lease.
Yeah.
This is the way it's got to be. This is the way it's going. And a full shout of word, praise to Seven Tides to grab this early on, not put the head in the sand and say, oh, I hope this goes away. Yeah. We're actually being proactive, getting out there. Look, you know, our clients, whether the commercial or residential, are important to us. Come and talk to us. And if we can do anything, we'll try and make that happen. And that's great, isn't it? And I hope a lot of other major residential and commercial agents and landlords, etc., adopt this and help, because we're in that necessity where they've got to help, because, you know, if you haven't got a job, if you haven't got income, you know, what can you do? You know, you need to sit down and talk and like get the best way forward for all parties. So Seven Tides, we respect you.
Hats off to Seven Tides. Yeah, that's really good. Hopefully, like you said, many more will follow suit. And it's a time that everybody has to try and help where they can, I suppose. So it's good to see that more and more companies like Seven Tides are thinking about the tenants.
Yeah.
And you mentioned as well, go on, it's on your tip of your tongue.
I was just going to say, you know, sort of, to just lighten the tone, put a smile on everybody's face, isn't it nice that we've just had our first dolphin pod spotted on the shores, or just off the shores of Dubai, Burj Al Arab. First dolphin pod since 2012. There's something like 40 dolphins, I think it was, swimming alongside boats on Sunday evening, just as sunset was coming in. So peaceful and quiet. 40 dolphins popped up, swimming alongside a couple of boats that are out there. Some great video on that. But isn't it great that in these troubled times, we're going back to nature. We're seeing dolphins off Dubai. We're seeing jellyfish and fish in the canals of Venice. We're seeing lions basking nicely on the roads in South Africa. We don't see any lions basking in Dubai. But apart from that, it's just nice, isn't it, that, you know, the world's going back to an original format, shall we say. We're not getting away with pollution and noise and everything. I quite like that.
That's definitely a positive that's come out of this whole situation. I can imagine the pollution levels must be ridiculously lower. You know, I mean, just taking out Emirates commercial flights must be a massive boost for the pollution levels.
You look at those heat maps around the world, you know, the northern end of Italy, where all the industry is, the industrial cities of China before COVID-19, the actual air quality of the photographs looking down were horrible, so much pollution everywhere. But then now you look at the same sort of heat map and it's like clear skies, isn't it? And in India, you actually see sort of monuments of only a mile away, whereas before this, even a mile away, you couldn't see it because of all the smog. You know? Yeah. So, come on. World, let's learn from what we're going through at the moment.
Very good
point.
Very good point.
Come on now, ask me about what I'd spent my 10 million on. I only get one sentence out.
I know, we leave it to the last minute. I know you're prepared for this, so I want to give you the full time to run through what you've been thinking about and what you've been dreaming on. So here we go. So 5 to 10 million dirham range. My answer was, what was my answer now? I think, I was thinking more on the 5 million, wasn't it? I was thinking of an apartment in the address in downtown.
Right.
What are you going to go for then? 10 million dirhams.
Right. As I say, I know Richard, our guest, is close. I'm going to go straight to it. I'm going to go for Al Barari. You know, I'm a Villa person.
Nice.
I was interested in, I think you can begin to get something around the 10 million mark at the one. But that might come later in a more market segment. But for me, District 1, I like District 1. And again, 10, 11 million starts looking very nice at District 1. But for me, there's only one place I'm going, Al Barari, Arabic for the wilderness. And it's called that for a reason, isn't it?
Yeah.
I love it up there. So green and spaced out and like back to nature. You feel like you're in Europe. You know, there's like little waterfalls and streams and lakes and there's all trees.
Yeah,
they grew new and re-established species lost to the UAE. They grew over 500 specimens of plants just for the landscaping of Al Barari.
Wow!
So when you put that sort of thought into it and that greenery and privacy around the place, you don't even know you've got neighbours. You're really away from it. And again, as we said earlier, like Serenia, it's one of those places that you work your socks off in the city, you do your deals, you do your business. you get in your car, and Albarai is only 20 minutes from the city centre. Sorrento is only 30 minutes from the city centre. You work your socks off, you put some chill out music or our podcast on for the way home.
Yes, exactly.
By the time you get home, you're relaxed and chilled, and you're away from Dubai. You're away from the hustle and bustle, and I like that. So I would go and live in Albarai. I love the designs as well. Enormous accommodation. I love what we call the B-type there. It's got a 30-meter high entrance hall as you walk in. You walk in and you look at, you know, my goodness. And like, you know, architecture, interior designers can go to town on these. So for even less than 10 million, you're getting a substantial 12,000-13,000 square foot villa with two separate cellars, which make perfect gyms and cinema rooms. You're getting three gorgeous receptions, studies, bedrooms, and so much potential to knock them round. Beautiful roof terraces overlooking the gardens, the lakes, etc. And would you believe it? It's one of the few places you can see the Burj Al Arab and Burj Khalifa from the same vantage point.
Yeah, exactly. No, I've heard of, I mean, I've seen
and
it.
And I sold it to you.
You've sold
and
it.
I sold it to you.
You've sold it. But I'm going to come back with something that a lot of people say, and I know you mentioned it there, the distance out of the city. That's something that's the main, objection or main issue that people come up with. Is it true that it's so far away from the city? And is there a new road being built, I heard?
Yes, and yes to both those things. It's that sort of preconceived idea, isn't it? You know, I used to work on the ranches. Oh, no, not the ranches. It's in Hatter Mountains. You know, it's not. Do you know what? I used to live in York, or just outside York, a medieval city. If I had to set up my office at 7 in the morning to get there for 7:45 at the latest. If I set off at 7:30, I didn't get there till 9:30 because of the traffic. The amazing thing about Dubai, we always go on about Sheikh Zayed Road and Al Khail and roads like that. But have you ever been in traffic for more than 30 or 40 minutes in this city?
Not really. Yeah, you are right. You do get very much, first world problems in Dubai with everything. After a very short period of time, you lose perspective of what is reality. And in reality, you know, a 20-minute drive, it's not really that bad, is it?
It's not, is it? And we've actually timed it from our office, downtown stroke Business Bay, 20 minutes into Albarai, you know, so it's nothing really. And once you're in Albarai, once you're even coming up the drive into those beautiful green overhanging drives into the development, you'll love it, I promise you.
Amazing.
So there you have it.
Well, I'm really happy for you, Rich. You managed to get that one in. I know you were really wanting to get that full pitch for Albarai included into the show. And we've done it just in time because we're now about to welcome Mr. Richard Hussain on the show. So let me try and get him connected through on the call. Usually a bit of a delay.
Yeah.
Rich, are you there? Can you hear us? Not quite. You got all your questions ready, Richard?
I'm ready.
Can you hear us, Rich?
Yes. Perfect. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Let me just put the video on.
Perfect. There you go. There we are. Loving the Jurassic Park.
You've got to be careful with the Rich because we're both Richard. So
I know. We'll call you Rich.
We're gonna get confused.
We'll see how we get on. We'll try and manage through.
How are you, Rich? Are you well?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. So I see you're wearing your favourite Jurassic Park T-shirt. We involved with that. Or is it just your favourite movie?
No, it's not actually. It's a good one, but it's not my favorite movie, not at all.
Okay.
But you know, it's actually my what I sleep in.
Oh,
it's an old T-shirt. You know,
Look at that, the entrepreneur from his bed to the desk straight away. We can't beat that. Anyway, we'll come on to that in a moment, actually, your entrepreneurial skills, because you have been very entrepreneurial for a lot of years here in Dubai, and, you know, there's things to talk about there. But first of all, just tell us a bit of background about yourself for the listeners. You know,
oh, we're starting already?
Yeah, we're on now.
We're live, we're rolling.
All right, cool.
So tell us about your background, Rich.
Background, like you mean born and raised in Australia, Melbourne, Lebanese background.
Okay.
Parents arrived to Australia very young, early 20s. And lived all my life there and came to Dubai in 2006, end of 2005, I think it was Boxing Day 2005, we arrived. And I was a director at EMI Records before I was at EMI in Australia and got transferred across. But just background is DJ since probably, I think it's 89. Been in the music business ever since. And now I'm into NLP and coaching and stuff. And started up some businesses in Dubai also. So that sort of stuff. So what specifically do you want to know? So I can...
I'm going to go back for a second. Right. So as you say, you're, without giving too much away, you're in one's middle age, shall we say. So you grew up in what? Probably the 70s in Australia, the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
So, and again, I know you love your Australian rules football, you love your cricket, you've got that, and you speak like an Australian, you wear your thongs, which means he wears his flip-flops when anybody starts coming in. Thongs is Australian for flip-flops, but you're correct. Australian. But you grew up with this Lebanese background as well, didn't you?
Correct.
Yeah. So how did those two cultures meet and merge? Was it pretty good fun, or was it some interesting times with the two cultures?
No, not at all. I mean, aside from having, tabbouleh or whatever, but I mean, we were pretty encultured within the community. I guess it's probably the same for, people in Britain and the US, that depending on the subcultures that you have in society. But my parents were there for a little while before, I was born. So they were embracing the culture but with keeping their own culture also. So we, I never really struggled like that. And within our group, we're all
Aussies. You're Australian, aren't you? For example,
yeah.
I know you used to play a lot of Australian rules football back in the day.
And I used to play also. Yeah. So, I guess getting to the cultures and stuff is because I probably speak on behalf of other people that are, second generation or third generation, is that when you go to your supposedly home country, like whether it's Lebanon or whatever, when you feel like a foreigner, it's like, you can tell that because it's a different mentality and stuff. So,
yeah.
But no, proud of the heritage. And that's not a problem. But yeah. So we're quite encultured.
Okay, that's good to know. So tell me, what, I know music's played a massive part in your life, hasn't it? And you were at a very young age. How did you get into music?
I was probably like mid to late 80s. I've got a sister that's 6 years older than me, and she started, going out to parties and stuff and hearing, all the music of the clubs, the stuff that you wouldn't hear that they wouldn't be playing on radio, and that would have been, early Bobby Brown and New Edition and those styles, Kool & the Gang and stuff like that. And then got into that, and I used to dance. I used to have my own little crew as a sort of like, a hip hop, dancing crew and stuff like that. And so I'd be in touch with DJs and, looking for the fresh cuts to do our, group dance sort of thing, for festivals and stuff. So that's how I first got into it. So I had a passion initially from my sister that, I'd hear music, go, oh, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
And then, was fascinated by, the late 80s sort of like dance, MC Hammer and all that sort of stuff, and then created my own crew and then,
We'll come on to this later, because I know a lot of that music still plays heavily in your DJ sets, doesn't it?
I've stopped DJing, but...
I know, but what I was going to say is just before you left Dubai, you were virtually DJing every night, weren't you? And you, you had huge followings wherever you went. You were the Pied Piper of gigs. Wherever you went, the crowds went too. But interestingly, you concentrated, because again, probably your age and your taste, but you were concentrating, and I've listened to you a few times, Kool and the Gang, all this kind of stuff, the rare stuff, Earth, Wind and Fire. Everybody loves, even, no matter what age you are, everybody loves to get up and dance that, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it was, you're right. I was doing, up until last year, I was doing about six or seven nights, almost every single night. I was DJing, and all the places I was at were packed, which is great. So, and playing that good mix of, the classics like Earth, Wind and Fire, Kool and the Gang, Luther Vandross with new stuff. And that was sort of like, you know, cannot not dance to that sort of stuff.
Indeed. Exactly. As I say, you sent me some very good playlists over the years, didn't you? Which you sent me one the other day. We started off with Queen, I think. We were a bit of retro Queen, but remixed by your good self.
Yes, yes. Queen. Well, during the quarantine, I've been lucky enough to find some old multi-tracks of Queen. So I worked on another one, Bites of Dust. And it's just like, it's not for commercial reasons, spending hours on it to just create my own DJ edit of it that I like and I think it should have been like, so that's it.
Amazing. Could we put it out there on the show? Could you help us with a catchy intro for the Dubai Life podcasts? Because we're using a platform called Anchor, and the edits and the cuts are pretty, they're all right, but I want something, that's really going to catch on.
No, I'm not probably the guy for that. I'd like to say yes, but I won't bullshit you.
So I appreciate that.
I can get you what someone.
If you know someone that can help, then that'd be awesome. So obviously music back in Australia, Melbourne, and then heading over to Dubai in 2006. How did that come about? There you go. Where was that?
What's that?
That background. Was that Melbourne?
Yeah, yeah. That's why. Nice. I was.
Love just, that.
So we might as well just give it the Melbourne feel while we can. How did I come across?
Dubai.
It's funny because I was, I started working with EMI Records in 2003.
Yeah.
And in 2004, I had a trip to Dubai, met the EMI team here, and we got along really well and stuff. And then an opportunity happened in 2005 where a director, head of sales role came up here, and they asked me if I'd be interested to take it. I said, why not? And I spoke to the wifey, and we said, why not? We'll give it a 2-3 years, as we all think when we come to Dubai, 2-3 years. And moved across Boxing Day. 2006 was a much different time here in Dubai.
Tell us, Rich, what were your first impressions of Dubai in 2006? What did you discover when you got here from Melbourne?
I actually thought it was really behind. I do a lot of like contrasting. It's funny. I don't know if I've mentioned this to you before privately, but I always thought that Dubai was behind. Like I'd say, we got this or we got this. And they were just, and the funny thing is, when you, after 10 or so years, you'd go back and go, well, actually Australia's behind now because Dubai's caught up so much in different ways. So, and that's got to do with a vast number of different things from, customer service, where they were pretty behind in 2000. It was different. It was more quieter for sure at the start of it. I mean, not everything was available, 2006, our main go-to place was still Dera City Centre.
Really?
Well, that was the place. I mean, anyone will tell you that used to come, although Mall of Emirates was open, there was no Dubai Mall, of course. And you'd either go to Mall of Emirates or Dera City Centre. And believe it or not, Dera City Centre was probably more times would go there than Mall of the Emirates because it's just happening.
Yeah.
Just everything was there, you know? So just a good vibe and other things like food and what you know, bang for your buck was a lot more. but it was really starting to go like, you know.
Yeah.
So the rents were going crazy and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, it was a fun time. It was more simple, but it was really good.
Okay. Good. Yeah. So you came to work as one of the leading lights of EMI Music Middle East here. But I know from previous tales around the barbecue, you sort of actually got to work with the super groups. You brought super groups to Dubai, like Coldplay, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I did. It's funny because I was doing Arabic also. So I was doing EMI here. We handled Warner Brothers, Ministry of Sound. We did Disney. So it was a bunch of different things. And then, you know, we had Coldplay here. We worked with them. We had Robbie Williams, his first show. So there was, I mean, we didn't bring them. The promoters would bring them, but we'd work with them on the ground, of course, you know. So sort of like, you know, a label.
What's your best story from your EMI days? I've got
loads of stories, funny ones with local Arabic artists, of course, because we did a lot of press conferences and, you know, promo tours for them here, and they're always fun and games. So no, I've got loads. I mean, one standout would be, you know, when we had Coldplay here in 2008, I think it was, in Abu Dhabi, Emirates Palace. And, you know, we went for sound check and Chris Martin's there and he's wearing his thongs. Well, you know, his flip flops. And he's like, Rich, what do you want to hear? And I'm like, well, clocks. So, you know, and one of those sort of feelings where you're just meeting the guy that is really down to earth. And
yeah.
I mean, you get the good ones and the really bad ones too. But, you
know, give us a bad one.
Let's keep
it. Bad story. Mentioned.
Let me just think one. Well,
you're right on the spot here.
I've had, you know, an artist walk out in the middle of a set. Yeah, like on a TV series I was working on. That was either 2012 or 2013. We'll discuss that. But yeah, it was like, she was, you know, we've got a production team of 60 or 70 and we're filming. We've got another international act with her. And she decides that she just wants to leave. And, you know, after 2 hours of recording and so she gets to the driver and the driver goes, where do you want to go? And I said, the driver, you're not taking her anywhere. She's got to go back in. She needs to. And we're out in an industrial area, so it's not like you can get a cab anyway. So, yeah, I've had some funny ones where...
Sounds like a diva.
Very much. So, yeah. So, those were sort of like some interesting stories.
Yeah.
I've got an interesting one of the EMI days. I don't know if I ever told you this, Rich. it's a funny one. We were releasing, I think, a Katy Perry record or something like that, and we had some problems with the ministry in Saudi Arabia because they were so strict. So our distributor says to us, you know, we need to pay the guy to get clearances and stuff like that. I don't know if we should be saying this, but you know,
too late. We're saying it. So keep going.
Just so you know, there's no editing on this podcast or this show, so.
But anyway, so kind of long story short, we gave a gift. So let your mind go anywhere you want to go. But we had to give a gift. By giving a gift that, you know, we could sort of get more lenience when we need a release to come out quicker, you know, because we'd get the release to get through, but, you know, to get it going. So anyway, so I said to the distributor, what are we getting? This is 2006, and he goes, oh, we'll just get him a Sony Ericsson phone or whatever. Those times it was, you know, the hot thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then, and I could claim that being at EMI and say, okay, we're going to get a gift or whatever. So 3 months later, we had the same problem. I said, what do we get him? And he goes, he wants something different. I'm like, okay, what does he want? Uh-huh. And he goes, he wants a sheep, you know, like meat. Yeah, an actual. I'm like,
so he's got, well, how do we claim to a sheep?
Yeah. So we're like, you know, how do we claim that? You know, so I remember calling the office in the UK and I said, you wouldn't believe it. So our UK boss says, hold on a second. He's put me on speaker. And he goes, can you say that again? Because I was taking a piss. So just like, how the hell? Yeah. And I'm like, what do I do? You know, how do we, you know, cash payment, whatever. We need to get the releases. So it was, yeah. Only in the Middle East, you know?
Only in Dubai, yeah. That's crazy. Don't even know.
That's Saudi. That was Saudi, actually.
Oh, that was Saudi. Okay.
Yeah, so basically what they're saying is, you know, because here the rituals, like,
yeah,
especially like Eid, you know, like the big Eid, like, yeah, you know, it's about the cow, and, you know, that sort of stuff. So yeah. Anyway, that was a funny one. But yeah, I've had some really interesting, you know, ups and funny stories in the Middle East. I mean, this place is great.
So you left EMI to set up your own music business, your own recording studio. Is that right?
Yeah, I did. So I was with EMI from Australia from 2003, and then here 2006 till end of 2011. So a good 6 years here. And I started up a company called Lionheart, which was sort of like a label. I ended up in a sub-label deal with Sony Music as they started getting, you know, setting up office here. And then I had a studio called Mind Loop Studios, which was working with all the creative agencies. So it worked in tandem. So it was two companies. And they were good days.
Yeah.
Very good days.
And again, as you said, good days. Dubai was on the upward trend. How did the 2008-2009 impact? You still at EMI Music then? You were, weren't you?
So, yeah. I was still. I mean, look, it was impacting. I mean, surely, you know, on the market. I mean, our sales were down. A lot of people were leaving. There was a mass exodus. But in general, for me, and I talked to old friends that have been in Dubai for a while. That was some of the best days. It's when Dubai was, you know, had the infrastructure, but it was a lot more quiet, almost like now. So, you know, that was good. But in 2012, 13, it just started picking up again. This was like probably the best time, if you think it now in hindsight, the best time for the business in especially in Dubai, and anyone's been in business long enough here, that's seen a decline from 2015.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's since the war in Yemen and you know.
Oil crisis,
but from 2000, yeah. So from 12 to 15, if you're in it was in that block, you made some good money. Yeah. Because it was just going back up again. It was great.
So again, you were the entrepreneur setting up the business then. How easy was it? Was it an easy sort of encouraging sort of scheme to be involved, setting your own business up, or do you have hurdles to overcome?
Just like any business, you have hurdles and stuff. I mean, one of the business, Lionheart, it was just easy to set up a company name and we, you know, I had a deal, obviously, because I was one of the important guys at EMI, and so it's like the competitor coming in and saying, you know, we want to work with you. So I you know, it was very easy in that way because I had a retainer going. You know, I could do whatever I want with the releases and consulting them as a retainer, but also doing my own releases. But the market was declining there from CDs, and we were going into more digital, which is okay. And then the other business, well, you know, although I understand studios, but I didn't understand the business of working with clients like, you know, Leo Burnett's and getting, you know, your Coca-Cola's coming in and your typical, you know, Johnson & Johnson FMCG products coming in. And we come from a different school, you know, from entertainment art and then dealing with those type of people.
Commercial side. So you're taking your business more into the commercial world of music and, like, you know, what's the word, support, you know, and like giving the clients, the big multinational clients, what they need to promote their brand.
Correct. Yeah. And I sort of opened up a new thing when I was here. I was like, a lot of, you know, you creatives would come in and say, oh, we've got to use that, you know, Beatles song or Blondie song or whatever in an ad. And I would be the sort of guy to say, right, if you want to do this officially, you know, it's going to cost you X, because I understand the music publishing side. So I did a couple of really cool, you know, I think I did, what is it, Galaxy Chocolate. We did a couple of things, like put songs in there and done some music in movies like Green Zone, Sex in the City. So, yeah, I've had, interesting stuff.
Interesting. Awesome. Is this to do with the Coca-Cola and the World Cup? You got heavily involved with that, didn't you?
Yeah, I did that also. The World Cup, the track with Jason Derulo, and we worked on the local duets, did the marketing, did the release of that. I've had a long relationship with Coca-Cola since 2012 when I started up my own business, and we did a TV show for them called Coke Studio with Universal. So, yeah, done stuff with them. They're a great client. Apple is one of my clients when they launched here in the Middle East also. So, amazing. Done some interesting thing. Dubai's been good, very good to me. Yeah, so I've got, you know, although I've left now, but I'm actually stuck at the moment because I came here for business and flights. So yeah, I don't live here anymore. I left in this time, actually, right this time in last year, 2019. Okay. So I left.
Yeah, but now come on, Rich.
Packed up my things.
One of the main reasons we've got you on the show is your other interest that you've always had a strong interest in, but now you're actually sort of putting more effort into building this side of you, aren't you?
Yes. NLP and.
Yeah, Rich tells me you're into psychology and hypnotherapy, NLP. I'm fascinated by this, especially sports side of it.
Yeah. Well, I'll explain what I'm doing. I did this course in 2015, so it's been over 5 years.
Uh-huh.
Neuro-linguistic programming, for anyone that doesn't know what that means, is neuro's brain. Linguistic is the language and programming is the system. So I like to say it's like IT for the brain. So almost like a programmer and understanding the way you process information, and it's applied psychology, you know, in that faculty. So I did it in 2015, but I've been interested, fascinated by, I have a marketing background and fascinated by consumer behavior and Red Bull on NLP and consumer behavior.
NLP, what does that stand for, Rich?
I just said it.
Linguistic
program.
Oh, I missed it.
Wake up.
Wake up, Rich. Come on.
My brain was asleep.
Yeah, so
I've been reading that sort of stuff for ages. And then a course happened in 2015, did that. And then, I've been practicing. Initially just practiced on friends and stuff like that, but then I got some clients and private clients and started doing more of the entertainment business. Some of the artists I deal with, I always had a knack for because you work with artists on tons of different like challenges that you usually have, so I was using my way of psychology, what I read, but when I did a course, I could really understand how to do a strategy and persuade people or stuff like that. But yeah, I do hypnotherapy. So I'm a certified hypnotist, NLP practitioner, life coach. It's great. I love it. And I've got now I'm more very, very interested in sports and entertainment.
Yeah.
So in the existing field that I'm working in, and I want to mention an artist I'm working with at the moment. And I'm getting into sort of like Aussie rules football, and I was keen on getting somewhere before I left. And now the sports is all sort of cancelled at the moment, but it'll all come back.
for sure.
Because when you understand the way the brain works, you can understand, like, everyone's got the potential, but question is, why is that person, you know, like, for example, in football, why is he, when the pressure's on, he'll miss?
Yeah.
It's a psychological thing.
Yeah.
And then when he's not even thinking about it, he's doing, you know, it's the same as tennis, you know, it's the same sort of thing, or golf.
Yeah.
Thinking about it, focusing on what you don't want, you get more of what you don't want.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of that stuff. And got to say, this shit works.
100%. Yeah.
Everything. And it's just simply just sort of asking the question, what do you want?
Having a clear outcome.
Yeah. And that usually, I mean, I would say maybe a quarter of the time, when you really ask that question, you will get the result.
Yeah.
Other times, you need more unpacking. It's like an onion, you know. Yeah. So you unpack that, and then you get exactly. And that's all it is. It just understanding what the real desire is, what the outcome.
Yeah.
And it's on the basis of the way someone thinks, based on their beliefs and values. Doesn't mean it's right. Doesn't mean my beliefs and values are right.
Yeah,
it's but obviously, based on their beliefs and values, they believe particular things. When you can tell someone that maybe your beliefs and values, would you agree that your beliefs and values are different than mine and everyone else's, and they're being taught, so it doesn't actually mean that they're right. So maybe you're taking this a little bit too serious.
Yeah. No, I completely get that. I come from a golfing background, and for me, I sort of got down to a decent level playing, and the big step up for me in performance was the psychology side of it. I started reading and listening to Bob Rotella, who's a fascinating, he's a top sports psychologist, started off in basketball, college basketball, and then moved over to golf and worked with some of the best players and major winners. And he's all about focusing on what you can control and what's in your ability, and focusing on positives. He says a really good line, and that's that the body and the brain don't understand the word don't. So if I say, for example, don't hit it in the water, they don't really understand it don't. Is. They're just seeing the visual water and you know, people.
Correct.
People focus, I think, too much on what they don't want to do, instead of really having a strong outcome, like you said, and having a focus on what they want to achieve. And it's amazing how the sports psychology world crosses over into business and indeed life in general. I think what you Absolutely. Focus on, by and large, is what you achieve and what you become. Yeah, I really do. I'm fascinated by it.
What is it? It was the quote that says, where energy goes, energy flows.
Yeah.
Something like that. So, and it's so true. It's like if I say to someone, don't think of an elephant.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to think of an elephant.
Yeah, exactly.
You cannot not. Because it's the unconscious mind and conscious mind have a different language.
Yeah.
And when you understand that, and that's and for me, I'm so excited to be working in this field more than anything else, because you know, music is a great thing, and I've been doing music and I'll continue to do it. And I'm managing an artist at the moment, which is an interesting project I've been working on for the last couple of years, and we're getting somewhere. But the psychology stuff is it's always with you.
Yeah.
It's your power, it's your knowledge, and what a great thing that you can help someone. I've had someone that, you know, was stuttering for 20 odd years, no longer stutters. So taking them. So, you know, there's a whole bunch of different things. I've worked with a lot of people on, and I don't discuss the clients because it's super confidential, but what I want to do now is, especially in sports, which is my new field, because I've done entertainment for so long. So complementing entertainment and sports, but with sports, I want to work on skills programs. Mm-hmm. So working with a skills coach and getting them to understand the basics of NLP. So for example, just to give, so it might sound a bit boring, but
no.
So in Aussie rules, right? So you've got, 20 odd players. when they're doing their drills with their skills,
yeah,
based on their psychology, but just doing a little test prior, you'll know who are the visual guys.
Yeah.
Who are the auditory guys, yeah, who the kinesthetic guys are. So an example that, and you can group them up accordingly. So if you've got all the feely type guys, when you're doing your drills, you can use the same communication to them, the communication that works with them, and group them up. Mm. And actually when you're communicating to them, you can be a lot more effective. And yeah, these are just small little things.
Efficiency.
Yeah, it's more efficient and you know, it's like, sorry, just to say this, it's like this. So you've got a wife and a husband, and the wife says, and it's the basic psychology stuff. She says, you don't feel what I'm saying. And then the husband says, you don't see what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
So simply just flipping the husband by simply saying, I feel what you're saying.
Because
when he says see, he's visual.
Yeah.
And she says feel, this is kinesthetic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they're not talking the same language. All of a sudden you change that language. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Connect on a different level.
Correct. So that's the idea. That's the exciting part. So
that's amazing.
Of doing that sort of stuff. So, and then just grouping, just being a little bit more smarter and having measurement regarding the mental side. But I think right now, I think with what's happening, I think mental health is a huge issue.
Yeah.
And especially now, it's probably a good segue, Rich, to get, just to say. And I mean, there's loads of work for people like us and that can help.
Because again, there must be some tremendous stress out there, anxiety about what's gone on with COVID-19, anxiety about earning potential and job situations. So come on, what are some, what positive mental attitude tips are first?
Look, everyone, first things first, the main thing is, I mean, everyone's in the same, in a similar situation. Yeah. I mean, that's not, you can't now look and say, oh, but these guys are okay. Actually, everyone. Well, 90%, unless you're in, you know, you're a doctor and you're in medical industry or you're in fast moving consumer goods like supermarkets. You know, just about every industry has been hit. So, I mean, that's the sort of, at least, it's not like losing a job during the peak of, you know, in 2006 or seven where there's work everywhere. Okay. So, so that's the positive out of it. And then the other thing is, well, I think it's probably the greatest thing is that you're going to get a lot of self-reflection and, you know, you're actually forced. We're all forced to sort of pull the handbrake and just, you know, as they say, smell the coffee for a second and say, okay, why am I doing what am I doing?
Yeah.
You'll get, you know, and with every type of recession or every sort of, there's a, you know, famous, saying that says with every devastation you have a realization. So, and I believe that, you know, that, and if you look at the companies in 2008 and you know, the GFC of those days, some of the biggest companies have gone, you know, Amazon, WhatsApp was created around about that time.
Yeah,
you know, Facebook. So Facebook went nuts from there.
Yeah.
So the iPhone went nuts, yeah, took another, you know, so, and I think what's the positive side of this is that, you know, because in understanding the brain and my background in NLP is that a lot of people are looking for certainty.
Yeah.
Right. And that's definitely the frustrating thing, right? Is that when you, if you're a person that's very focused on certainty, you're going to have a problem during this time, because if anything's clear, it's uncertainty. Okay, but what I'm saying is with uncertainty, there comes a lot of opportunities. And the advice I like to give, and I give a lot of my friends is look, we have a infodemic. We have too much information out there.
Yeah,
and
confusion, isn't it?
It's absolute confusion. Someone will say it's a conspiracy. Someone else will say something else. Then they say mainstream media is all, so a whole bunch, you know, BBC or whatever. I've been telling people, try and limit as much as possible. Don't watch the news. Yeah. Right? And it's probably not a good thing to tell your listeners, but it's true. If you're going to watch the news straight out and look at the numbers, like, oh my God, UAE's gone up another 500, another 1,000 and whatever.
Yeah.
Just do things, you know, like, it's not, and it's not to say not to be, you know, don't watch the news and be oblivious to it. No, you can.
Yeah.
But you don't make it your daily thing. Change things up, you know, like, listen to music, read a book, spend more time with family, have Zoom calls.
Yeah.
Surround yourself with, you know, even if we're doing social distancing, surround yourself with people that are positive, give you the gloom and say, oh, you know, we're gone. It's 10,000. It's going to be 20,000 by next month. And no.
Yeah.
So that's the best sort of advice I can give. And you know, but it's seriously a good time for self-reflection.
Yeah.
You know, there is a lot of bad things that are happening. You'll probably, you know, they say, you know, there'll be more kids, you know, in isolation, but then there are going to be more divorces and whole bunch of different things are going to come out of this. But it's like anything, you know, what do you get out of a situation?
Yeah.
And if you look at, you know, World War II, and I read a book, Man's Search for Meaning, which is a really good book. It's from a guy that was in concentration camp. Yeah. Now, if you want to talk about anything that's, you know, really bad, I mean, that's probably the worst you can be.
Yeah.
You don't know when you're going to go in into the get. That's serious.
Everything's out of your control in that situation, isn't it? You've just no control. You're just living day by day. Everything it's out there.
It's out of your control. And when we're talking about certainty and stuff like that, you don't know. And you don't know when you're going to be, you know, next in the gas chamber. And I know it's a serious thing, but at the same time, I mean, they adapted.
Yeah.
As they adapted on just having a piece of bread and soup every day. And
perspective, isn't it? People have got to look at this and realize this is the best time to be alive ever as a human throughout all of history. We've got it the best now. And if there was ever a pandemic or whatever it is to happen, now's the best time. Imagine if this would have happened 15 years ago, it'd have been completely different. We'd have lost touch with, you know, friends and loved ones.
There wouldn't have been a Zoom calls or whatever. No Zoom but calls. I mean, it's seriously a good time for just for people, even if they lost their jobs, right? It's like, you will have self-reflection. You might get bitter at the start or whatever, but at the same time, you should be saying, well, did I, you know, there'll be a lot of people out there, I'm sure, that would be saying, I didn't really like that job anyway.
Yeah.
that boss was an asshole.
When you look at it, when you really objectively look at it, were you really happy? Probably not. Now's a chance to get
and,
more.
And let me ask you this. I mean, you know, a lot of people have progressed in their lives of, some of the times where they thought it was the worst thing, and this is the best thing I could sort of give out, is like, you know, when there's a relationship, they have a divorce and they're shattered, or their wife's left them, or they've lost their job. Inevitably, what happens is that, you know, the next step, for whatever reason you put in that position, is usually better.
Yeah.
When you reflect on it, you go, oh, wow, you know what? That was actually... that was bad. Or it's like a friend that you had a friend and then you're shocked and you're no longer friends with that person.
Yeah.
And then you think to yourself, at that time you got it. And then after it, you go, wow, aren't I lucky? You know, so you've got to look at, it's like the exact word, I think what you mentioned rightly was perspective. And it's good that we're having this intellectual conversation, because it's all about perspective. I mean, you might see a painting and think that's amazing. And I see it and I think it's crap. So it's the way you look at things, and you know, I guess the only thing is with perspective, and I just say is, because it's your reality, and how you see the world is your reality. It's different than other people. We're all living in different sort of like semi-realities anyway, but without digging into the rabbit hole, but you know, but we're looking at things all differently, and it's good to, when people say get real and get into reality, but at the same time, don't get delusional. Because, you know, I have a problem with these people that are just like, positive, 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 positive. And it's good. Yeah. I want, but you know, if this happened and this happened, oh, it's okay, it's all positive. No, you know, I think you got to have a bit of balance there.
Yeah, and that's, I think it's okay to see it as it is, you know, not worse than it is, but sometimes you need to step back and say, okay, we are in a, you know, I'm not personally, but if you were personally in a bad situation, to say, right, okay, acknowledge the fact that you're in a bad situation and then look at, you know, the future and way out of it and how you can improve out of the situation.
It's worse. Inevitable. It's like, you know, it's Tony Robbins, he says it really well. He's with everything in situation that happens, he says, is it the beginning or is it the end?
Yeah.
It's just the way you look at it. You go, is it the beginning? Do I look at this as a beginning or the end? Yeah. If it's the end, then it's going to be the end. Whatever you think, I'm hitting you guys up with the metaphors. Like, what's his name? Henry Ford says, whatever, if you're right, if whatever you think you're right, if you think you're right, you are right. You know, so.
Who thinks he can't are usually right.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Whether you think you can't. I really think, guys, and this is not, you know, the positive bullshit stuff, but this is really, I really think that it's such a unique situation. We've never had this.
Yeah.
That I really think that we're up for something that's, I think there's got to be loads of opportunities after this, to be frank.
Yeah.
And one thing is for sure, you got to get onto the digital plane. Because if you're not on a digital plane,
yeah.
This is like when the smartphones come in and when computers came in the 90s and the internet, and if you weren't computer savvy, you wouldn't get the jobs. And it's going to be the same thing here. It's our technology is just going to get accelerated to another level.
Yeah.
And it's a great time for personal growth. Just imagine how many thousands of people, millions actually, they've been forced to stop their work and they've been stuck in isolation for the first time. And just think about it, because we're all going through this program every day and all of a sudden it stopped and you get a reflection. You go, oh, wow, you know, I didn't realize I've been at that job for 5 years or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Or, you know, how many people have gone on the flip side of hearing stories of, you know, the woman saying, wow, I didn't realize my husband's such an asshole during day while he's working.
Yeah.
He's so rude to the people.
Yeah.
So how do we all want to live with a guy like this? So, you know, it's waking up. It's creating a reality. And I really think it's a positive time. Seriously.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
Yeah.
It's a great time. Great time to be alive, man.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Turn.
Right, Rich. Here's our final question, our signature question on the Dubai Life
podcast. Oh, because it is a Dubai show, yes, that's correct.
Yeah, exactly.
So, this is for you. I want you to describe your perfect day in Dubai. And you can, like, it's imaginations. You put all your favorite things together from where you go to breakfast, how you spend the day, and where you'd end up the day doing what. So, talk us through your most.
There'll be a steak in there, let me tell you. Breakfast would be a nice Lebanese breakfast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where do you recommend?
Well, there's plenty, but somewhere that I recommend, which is really good, good price, good quality food, great service, is Safari, which is on Sheikh Zayed Road next to, what's that street? It's next to Mall of Emirates. It's that turn off just before. It's really good. It's next to the
the hotel, is it? It used to be the W.
No, it's not that one. It's anyway, it's where the anyone that knows going towards Mall of Emirates and
oh, okay,
there's that petrol station there on the last turn off before, if you know, I forget the streets, I've been away for a while. Okay. That's definitely the breakfast, and that would be a large breakfast. So you wouldn't have to, you wouldn't have to need to have lunch, right?
Yeah.
And again, I don't think I've ever had a Lebanese breakfast. What does
you're missing out.
Lebanese breakfast comprise of?
Well, it's definitely got, usually it's got labneh, which is yogurt. Is it yogurt? I think. You could have hummus there. So you got your dips. You have to have Lebanese olives. And then they have it's something called kebaneh, which is like, it's like steak tartare, you know, the French one.
Yeah.
So you have that, and it's Lebanese breakfast is awesome.
A bit of halloumi as well.
You have a manish. Right. Yeah, the Rich, halloumi, the manish.
Rich, you're going to take me for one. As soon as we can get out of this lockdown and it's sensible and the right thing to do, before you go back to Australia, you're going to take me for a Lebanese breakfast.
Would love to, mate.
What happens after breakfast? What do you do then?
Oh, look, you know, I don't know. What do you do in Dubai other than shopping or, you know, go to one of the malls or walk down to JBR or, you know, I mean, you could probably go for a swim.
Yeah.
Because the beach is beautiful here. So do, you know, a bit of exercise or, you know, walking around the beach would be nice.
Nice.
And then, you know, have a nice dinner would be somewhere like a meat co.
Yeah.
At Madinat.
Yeah.
You know, just seriously good steaks, you know, and enjoying the beautiful weather. And
yeah.
I mean, that would be sort of like night out or go to somewhere like the Main, you know, if you like seafood. And
yeah, the Main's nice. Love the Main.
Rich, why, as you say, because the end of the day is going to be very important for you with your music contacts and your love of music. And again, you just mentioned the Main, where you, funny enough, were one of the you were the premier DJ there.
That was the only DJ there, yeah.
That packed it out. So every time I went, I couldn't even, apart from standing next to you in the DJ booth, I couldn't get anywhere near a space. So Where would you go to chill out at night?
Oh, look, there's so many places in Dubai, to be honest. I mean, this is the greatest thing about this city. The city's got so much to offer. It's a great city. You know, there's another good place I like called the West Lodge, and there's another place I DJed at. But funny enough, I like the place that I worked at. Mm. It's in Marquis.
JW Marquee,
and it's like on the 70 whatever floor, and it's so beautiful just to chill out there.
Mm.
You can have a drink or a coffee and you've got the view of Dubai, and it's so chilled and beautiful. And then it goes into crazy, you know, nightclub mode in the evening. But you know, I mean, there's some ripper places in town.
Yeah,
ripper. That's a good Australian phrase. Some ripper places. I like that.
It's true. Yeah. So you know. So, but I've got a funny one for you. Just a little joke.
Yeah.
When I first arrived in 2006, I went to Debenhams.
Okay.
You call it Debenhams or Debenhams? We don't have that in Oz. And I was seriously looking for a pair of flip flops, right? And I've gone into the store and just because, you know, it's your first month or two, you don't think of things. And, you know, I've said to the woman, I said, I'm looking for a pair of thongs. And she goes, for you, sir, or for someone? I said, for me. What? And I didn't even think about it. And she's taken me to the thong section.
Oh, God.
Exactly.
Australian culture.
Yeah, there is. It's different, but yeah, it's really good. But yeah, I don't know. Look, the other thing is, I think Dubai is going to have, and I think I spoke to you about this, Rich. It's going to be a really challenging time. I do believe that the guys here, the leaders here, they're great visionaries. So, I mean, and they've I can tell you from experience what I've seen in the last 13, 14 years since I've been here is that they've always kept, you know, maintained and grown the city, because it is such a different place than it was 2006, and I'm sure it was in 96 another different place from that. So what I'm saying is that you know, keep the faith, and I think, you know, I mean, I'm a big fan of Shaq Mo, And I think what they do is phenomenal. But it's going to be super challenging. I'm just, for me, from as an interest from as an entrepreneur and business guy, I'm interested to see what they will do, because they've got massive challenges when your community is 90% expatriates.
For sure, yeah.
You know, like in Britain and Australia, they've got a bunch of stimuluses that are happening for the locals, but this is a complete different ballgame.
Yeah, you're quite right. Rich, before we go, how can people find you and follow you? Where are you on social media? Where can people?
Well, I'm on Instagram, but I'm sort of like, to be honest, and Rich knows me like this, I'm sort of like the behind the scenes guy. So I'm not big on promoting myself, but at the same time, when you don't, it could work in favor for people that want to discover you, because they're like, well, this guy just doesn't work with everyone else.
Yeah.
He's got a different unique.
Exactly.
Not because I don't want, what's that?
A bit of exclusivity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm on Instagram. So it's Richard Hussein 12.
Perfect.
And YouTube, I've got my own YouTube channel. It's the same. So my name is on there. So yeah, I mean,
amazing.
Are you going to do any DJing before you go back to Oz? Because I think you're going to be here with us till July, aren't you, before you go back to Australia?
Yeah, I've got to wait until the flights reopen.
Are you in talks to any DJing anywhere before you go? If anybody wants to pop in and see you DJ?
I don't know, because I didn't bring my stuff. You know, I mean, I've got a laptop, but I'm not sure. I've had a couple of, I've been talking to the guys at West Lodge, so I might do a set, or, you know, if they want me to do it. But no, I'm not really, I mean, it's okay when you play the classics anyway, but I'm not really sort of like, it's been a year or so, under a year, because I DJed in Melbourne a couple of times. But I haven't done it. It's sort of like now it's done.
Okay, fair play.
Brilliant. All right. Well, there we have it, guys. Thank you all so much for listening right to the end. We really appreciate it. Just a quick note, if you are listening on Apple, then please give us a 5-star rating. It would be nice for 5 stars, but you can be honest. We don't mind. And also, you can follow us on Instagram at the Dubai Life Podcast. So there we have it. Thank you so much for your time, Rich. Really appreciated it. Some great stories.
Absolutely.
Listeners will really enjoy it.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
See you now. Bye-bye.
Cheers.